Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Welcome back to another episode of Three Guys Theologizing. This is Barry York, one of the co-hosts, and I'm delighted today that actually both my friends have returned. Scott's back with us, so welcome back, Scott.
Thank you. Good to be back.
And Kyle Borg as well.
Boo!
So we're glad to have the three of us put the three back into 3GT. We're glad that you've joined us, and we wanted to talk about a topic that I think affects all Christians. We're called to a life of discipline as believers in Jesus Christ. That's what it means to be a disciple, is to be a person who's disciplined. But if we're honest, there are days when our hands lag, our knees grow weak, and we're not able to continue on like we ought to do in our Christian walk. And so I want to talk about the subject of idleness today in the Christian life and ways that we might encourage in overcoming it. I thought I'd start off, guys, by introducing this topic by referring to Richard Baxter's book, The Reformed Pastor. One critic of the book says his book is a recipe for overexhaustion, as Baxter really gives us a rigorous idea of what a pastor's life should be like. But one of the things that he addresses in his book is actually the subject, a pastor's tendency toward laziness. He talks about how a pastor cannot be devoted to his studies as he ought, or negligent to duties such as discipline. He says if the devil can defeat the shepherd, cause him to get lazy in his duties, then the sheep will scatter, and so on and so forth, for a couple of pages, guaranteed to produce guilt in the best of us. So
yeah, I'm you know, as the only active pastor on this podcast, I'm not going to lie, I'm feeling like you're really targeting me here, Barry. Kind of hurts my feelings.
Well, we actually told you we were going to treat idleness, but we really want to just treat you, Kyle.
Fair enough. I wish I'd gotten some preparation for this. This is not a safe space, and I'm a millennial, and Scott knows that I need safe places.
Well, I did think we'd start there, maybe speak to our own selves. Is this an area you feel like you struggle in, Kyle, or is over busyness more your problem?
Well, I mean, in an effort of transparency, I'd say yes and no. You know, specific to the pastoral ministry, I don't think I would classify on the whole that my pastoral ministry is defined by one of laziness or idleness. I'm extremely busy. I often feel almost spread too thin in some regard. I don't always, and maybe we can get into this, I don't think the solution to idleness is busyness. Right. Necessarily. Right. And maybe we can open that up more. But I would not say that my ministry is characterized by idleness. I would freely admit that idleness and laziness is a temptation that is probably near to my heart. I really enjoy time off. I really enjoy relaxing. And there's a distinction to be made, I know, between rest and relaxing. We can get into that. But it does take a degree of self-discipline to not give way to those things. And I have found as a pastor, especially, I remember somebody asking me in my first year of ministry, you know, what's kind of been the most startling thing about being a pastor? And I said, well, one of them is nobody standing over my shoulder. Like nobody manages my time for me. And because I work out of a study in my house, outside of my wife and children, if I wanted to stay in my pajamas all day long and do relatively next to nothing on a day-to-day basis, there's very few people who would notice that.
We can't see you on the video though, Kyle.
Yeah, I am fully in appropriate daytime clothes. Let me just put it that way. And so, it does take self-discipline to stay motivated and to do work. So that's as transparent as I'm willing to be at the moment. I don't think I have a ministry characterized by idleness. I am very aware of the sin and temptations in my own heart. and idleness certainly lurks there.
Well, I do know just in talking, interacting with lots of pastors, and not just pastors, but others, as you've mentioned, who have to control their own schedule, that this can be a particular temptation because you don't have the accountability of coworkers or people viewing what you're doing on a moment-by-moment basis. So definitely that's a hazard of our occupation and of our job. But let's move on and talk about this in a more general fashion. Americans are, I think a lot of the world tends to look at Americans and they and a lot of Americans look at themselves and tend to say they're busy. It seems like if you ask people how they are, probably the second most common answer after I'm fine is that I'm really busy. You just said a little bit ago, Kyle, that that's not just necessarily the antithesis to idleness. So what did you mean by that? And let's flesh that out a little bit.
I don't know. It just sounded super good in the moment. So no, I'm kidding. So we need to remember, Scott, feel free to tag team out here anytime and get me out of this conversation. We do need to remember that part of the curse of sin is that we now labor and toil by the sweat of our brow. That's a very present reality of the lives that we live. And the extent of that curse will not be removed until we are brought into the very presence of Jesus. And yet one of God's common graces to us is that in this life, we are afforded rest. You know, very specifically, you think of the 127th Psalm. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over a city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. There is a place in the Christian life for rest. There is a place in the Christian life for relaxation. But I think that biblical rest and what you might call biblical relaxation, biblical recreation, it differs from this idea of idleness. And it does so in the sense that biblical rest is for a purpose and to an end, that we might have our strength and our energy restored to continue doing that which the Lord has given our hands to do. Whereas I think biblically defined, idleness is kind of this, it's a failure to have a purposeful eye to the future. You know, you think of the Proverbs that warn against idleness. You know, you think of Proverbs 19:15. Slothfulness casts into a deep sleep. An idle person will suffer hunger. An idle person is one who does not have a purposeful eye to the future, working and laboring in the present to secure food, and so they will go hungry. Think of Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 18. Through sloth, the roof sinks in, and through laziness, the house leaks. So I think there is a difference to be made between rest and relaxation, which is very important, and idleness, which the scriptures everywhere condemn and speak against.
Yeah, and I wanted to add to your definition of idleness. It's not just a lack of a vision for the future, which I would agree with you, but it's a lack of progress toward that vision. I mean, I see people work, and I use that word loosely, you know, 8-10 hours a day doing absolutely nothing. Hmm. And that's idleness for me. I had an economics professor who used to talk about, not to bore anybody with, you know, theories on economics and value, but this idea that
boring.
Thank you, Kyle. That somehow work, labor equals value. And that's not the case, because I could sit here and he used the example of taking a spoon and scooping water from one glass to the sink, or, you know, scooping water with a spoon. There's no value in that. There's no progress in that. It's idleness. And it's that's another way we can look at this. So it's not just lack of working. It's not just sitting at home with your hands folded and taking a nap in your pajamas, Kyle. That's not, not that you would do that.
Nice. Never.
But it's a lack, and I do like what you said, Kyle. It's a lack of with an eye to the future, and it's a lack of making progress, kingdom-oriented progress. I think that's the best definition of idleness. So you could work 20 hours a day and be completely idle, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that is the idea of progress. Thank you for bringing that up. I think that's so important. And I think it's biblical. You know, Proverbs 24, the wisdom teaches us, right? I passed by the field of a sluggard, by the vineyard of a man lacking sense, and behold, and the description of the sluggard's field is that it's overgrown with thorns. The ground is covered with nettles. Its stone walls are broken down. It's not just this failure to perceive and to prepare for the future through labor and work. It is the failure of progress. You know, here this sluggard has done nothing to pull out the weeds. Here this sluggard has done nothing to prepare the ground so that he's not making that progress. I think that's a really important point, which then gets to that distinction between, right, the opposite of idleness is not just busyness. Because like you said, Scott, you can be spooning up water, and that can be a very busy task. At the end of the day, it's not making progress. It's not accomplishing anything. And so I think that's helpful.
To that point, in 1 Timothy, Paul describes young widows who aren't doing what they should be doing. And he says they learn to be idlers, going about from house to house. So not only idlers, but also gossips and busybodies. So it's interesting, he describes them both on the one hand as idlers, but then also calls them busybodies. So it's, as you guys are saying, it's easy to look active, but in essence, you're not progressing in a way that's glorifying God and doing what the Lord wants you to do. As you think about believers, and of course, whenever we start talking about the church, we have to be really careful so that no one thinks we're talking about them. but do you see this being an issue, a problem in the local church where, again, maybe people look real busy, but they're not really progressing toward goals they should be striving for? And if so, in what areas do you see these types of things?
Yeah, I think it's an issue. You know, I mean, how could it not be? Scripture everywhere cautions us against this, warns us against it. You know, you already used the example of Paul from Timothy, but you think of 1 Thessalonians and 2 Thessalonians, this is a theme that comes up again and again. Mm-hmm. Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy say, you know, when we were with you, we set an example, and the example we set was working extremely hard so that you might follow in our footsteps. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, they write, you know, We've encouraged you in the Lord Jesus. You need to aspire to live quiet lives, to mind your own business, to work with your own hands. As you come to 1 Thessalonians 5, they say, you know what? You need to caution the idle brother among you. And it's interesting because in 2 Thessalonians, it's like, okay, you've cautioned them. They still haven't listened. They're being idle. You know, warn them once, warn them twice, have nothing to do with them. That's how serious this is. My point in that is that, you know, being a Christian doesn't give you an exemption to this sin. I think it was Robert Murray McShane who said, you know, the more he got to know his own heart, the more he realized that every sinful principle that exists in Satan exists in his heart as well. So that's just generally speaking, yes, idleness has to be a temptation and a sin in the church today because it's always been that way and a right understanding of ourselves. I think in particular, without naming names, I think we see this young people. I think young people need to be instructed on good work ethics. You know, we continually live in a culture that is not encouraging that or reinforcing that. You know, even secular literature is saying a lot of our young people aren't growing up. They're not learning what it is to take responsibility and to work hard. And inevitably, their lives are going to be marked by idleness without that type of positive Christian work ethic being enforced upon them. I think a lot of our young people give themselves to very frivolous things. They might be very busy, but I don't see that they're busy in progressing all the time in the faith and in the things of God and becoming men and women who are men and women of faith. I think that, and that's not just true of our young people, not to just pick on young people. That can be very true of our older people as well. I think that the world of social media has really become the place for idle busybodies that the Apostle Paul warns about. And that's true of women and it's true of men. I think we only need look at social media and so many of our interactions on that to see the way in which idleness probably permeates our lives more than we're willing to admit.
Yeah.
And do you think maybe you could measure that by just like how many pictures someone posts on Instagram or something like that?
No, definitely not. I don't. I would be more concerned about the hours they spend watching TikTok, and I'm guilty as charged. So
well, you know, I don't think, as much as I dislike social media, and you all know that, I don't think that's necessarily the issue, because you have an older generation that can be very idle in their faith as well. And you think about people who reach retirement age, when they have now more time than ever to serve the church, and they and people don't. I'm retired, so I can't do that. So this is a real problem, not just for young people who like to play on TikTok, whatever that is, or Facebook.
Okay, boomer.
but it affects older people who, you know, may just like to do crossword puzzles or read the newspaper. You know,
I think that's a great observation. You know, talking about the sins particular to different age groups, I think we live in a retirement society, but retirement can often be an excuse for idleness, even idleness in the church. I really appreciate that, Scott. That's a good point.
What are some other areas you think that you see people giving themselves over to idleness? If you're trying to explain to them what that looks like and why it's a danger. You've mentioned social media. Do you see it in other areas?
I think just generally speaking in a work ethic. And what I mean by that is the Bible, and as Christians, we ought to value and have a very high work ethic. You know, work is not a four-letter word in the pejorative sense. Work existed before the entrance of sin into this world. God, in a very real sense, created us with the purpose to work and to labor. Granted, again, the curse of sin now rests on that work and labor, making it very toilsome and burdensome. But that reality doesn't change the fact that as Christians, we are to have a tremendous work ethic. You know, again, 1 Thessalonians 4, Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy are writing, and they're saying, look, the instructions we're giving you, we give you through Jesus. What is Jesus' will for you? That you work with your own hands. You think of Ephesians chapter 4, where the Apostle Paul is talking about putting off the old self, putting on the new self. You know, he says, let the thief no longer steal, rather let him do honest work and to labor with his hands, that he might have something to share with those who are in need. The Bible really commends a very high work ethic. And that's very important as Christians. We need to reflect a biblical work ethic. And by that, I don't mean, you know, the world seems to communicate this message to people that you've got to go out and change the world with the work that you have to do. That's not what the Bible talks about. The Bible talks about wherever your sphere of work is, glorify God, work hard as one who's working for the Lord, not for the pleasing of men. And that's what a biblical work ethic is. But I do think people need to be reminded of that. It's so easy to cut corners. It's so easy to want to clock out early. It's so easy to want to grumble and complain about these realities. And I think part of that is the manifestation of this idea of idleness and slothfulness and laziness.
Yeah, it's interesting in the book of Titus, and of course the people to whom Titus was ministering, the Cretans are described by Paul as lazy and liars and that type of people that he was having to deal with. And it's really interesting, one of the themes of the book of Titus is an urging of people to do the good deeds in these different spheres you've just mentioned, Kyle. Young women learning to be workers at home, and young men learning to do their work faithfully to the Lord. And the book ends with that theme, you know, let our people learn to do good deeds to meet pressing needs so they won't be unfruitful. So there is that tendency in us all, but I think in particular places, particular times where people are more prone to giving themselves over to what the Bible also refers to as worthless things or wasteful things. Let's pick on a few areas. You've mentioned social media. We've mentioned people who are retired who might give themselves over to too much idleness. What about video games? What do you guys think about video games? I think off the air I called them computer games to show that I'm a boomer. But do you see that as a problem where you are? Or?
I'm sorry, I was playing Sudoku. What? It's a joke. Not playing on my phone or my computer. But yeah, I think it's a real problem. It's so easy to get engulfed in those things and waste time. They are a real time killer too. You can spend an hour on a video game. Not that I've done it. I've seen it done with my children on occasion. They can spend an hour on a video game and not realize any time has elapsed. So it can just be a time waster and a time eater like you can't imagine. So yeah, I think that's a real problem with idleness and video games.
I think definitely it can. Now we're always tempted, right, for the appearance of godliness, do not handle, do not taste, do not touch.
Right.
But we need to acknowledge that, yeah, you know, as a pastor, it has, you know, as one who's not very addicted to video games, I'll get into my own personal practice in a moment. But I have been struck at the amount of relationships that are harmed and hindered, whether it's marital or parental, especially by video games. And like Scott said, the amount of time that it consumes and wastes, and it's a very real problem. You know, I've heard from wives who are just frustrated and fed up with all he does is come home from work, plugs into the video games. That's all he does. He has no time for me, has no time for the children, things like that. And we need to take that very seriously. You know, that's idleness at its finest. At the same time, I personally do think video games can be a means of rest and relaxation. You know, I'm not addicted to video games. I don't know that I ever have been. I enjoy video games every now and then. And I usually go, Rachel and I laugh, I go in spurts where for a couple months I'll be like, yeah, this is a great video game. And I'll play it and the kids enjoy watching me play or they'll play with me. We do Mario games together, racing games, the Mario levels, all that kind of stuff. And then I won't touch it for another 10 or 11 months. And it's just like, oh yeah, I forgot that I had the gaming system. And then it'll be like, oh, let's play this again. So for me, it can be an outlet of rest and relaxation. You know, in the pastorate, I'm reading a lot. I'm thinking a lot. To be perfectly honest, I love some mindless resting where sitting down to read a heavy book is not going to be my idea of putting my feet up for the evening. Mm-hmm. But I do think, and we need to be very careful, that these things don't give excuse to idleness in our lives.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Kyle, that sometimes just a moment of mindless activity is what your body needs. As somebody who sits and thinks all day at my job, the last thing I want to do sometimes is come home and read and think deep thoughts constantly. I mean, there has to be a time for rest, and it does wear you out to be deep in thought like that for a long time. It is tiring. So I wouldn't suggest you throw out the baby with the bathwater either. Of course, we could have a discussion on what kind of games are
Zelda,
appropriate.
Zelda, always, I'd be willing always to have that discussion. Zelda, anything Zelda. Do you guys know what that is?
Or who is she?
She's playing Sudoku and Solitaire. Yeah, who is she? She's the princess that Link always saved.
Now, I am familiar with the original Zelda from Nintendo days, but I have no idea. I didn't know it was still around.
That's unfortunate. It is the greatest video game legacy of all time.
Well, it was a great video game on Nintendo, which yeah, I enjoyed playing when I was in eighth grade. But, you know, that's been a couple
when
years ago.
When I was immature before okay. I'd gone through puberty.
Okay, boys. Boys, right. let's bring this. Why don't we try to wrap this up with some help? Let's say you're trying to help someone in your congregation. Maybe they are prone toward idleness and waste a lot of time. A young man wastes a lot of time on a video game, or you have a wife who is frustrated by that, or you do have someone in the church who's going around spending a lot of time in affairs that are not that shouldn't really involve them. How do you counsel? How do you encourage people toward progressing toward what should be right and true goals as ministers, as elders in the church, as we come alongside people, what should we be counseling them? How should we be encouraging them?
I think one of the first things we need to do, and is most helpful, is to demonstrate for these people what a good work ethic is, what it means not to be idle. And so show them, have them over. If it's somebody who's addicted to video games, and he's married to, you know, newly married, have them over to the house, to your house, or go out together and demonstrate what it looks like not to forsake your spouse and those things. Encourage them. You know, hey, why don't you put the game away for a little while? You don't have to get rid of it altogether, but, you know, Kyle, put Zelda away for a little bit.
No! And then,
you know. But I think those are the two most important ways I think that we can help those that are struggling with idleness.
So I think especially that idea of serving as an example. Again, if you go back to the Thessalonians, it's remarkable how many times these inspired authors, we set an example for you to imitate in the way in which we labored among you. So the example is key. I think it's a very biblical thing that we warn those who are idle. So how do we begin to help them? By doing what Jesus actually commands us to warn them, to warn them of the seriousness of idleness. You know, it's fascinating, again, that Paul in 1 Thessalonians said, you know, warn the idle, be patient with them. And then in the second letter, now we command you, brothers, in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, that you keep away from any brother who is walking in idleness and not in accord with the tradition that they received from us. Like, this is a sin, and we need to do exactly what we're told. We need to warn them. And I think the Proverbs are filled with very practical warnings of what the fruit of idleness is. It's a lack of food. It's a lack of comfort. It's a lack of safety. It's a lack of security. This is the path of fools. This is not walking in covenantal wisdom with God. And so I think just warning them is the means that, one of the means that God has given to get them to not be idle and slothful. And like Scott said, to encourage them as well. You know, Paul doesn't shy away in Romans chapter 12. You know, he says, look, don't be slothful in zeal. You know, keep serving the Lord, keep growing in grace, keep striving after these things. The Lord blesses.
Well, I think those little admonitions are very helpful. And we do have to, I do think we have to warn ourselves and others about the sin, because it can seem so satisfying to just spend some time doing what we want to do. And we begin to neglect our responsibilities before the Lord. I think we begin to forget that one day we're going to have to give an account of our time. Paul encourages us to mark our time, count our days, because they can easily be filled with evil and wasteful things. And so to just have a warning and to have some positive ways to overcome laziness in our lives is very important. And it really does go back to looking at Christ and just thinking about how his days were so filled with him giving himself to other people. And when we're really called to be servants of our great King, how important it is that we're making sure we're available to serve and to show his love to other people. Well, we're out of time, guys, so I think I'm going to wrap it up with that. We're glad that you have joined us on this episode of 3GT. We hope this wasn't just your way of being idle, just kind of some mindless activity for 30 minutes. We hope that these times with us encourage you. If they do, we'd love to hear from you in that regard. So I want you to shoot us an email. You can find information about how to do that over at 3GT.xyz. You can also support this broadcast because we are very reliant upon those who are keeping us on the air. So if you'd like to do that, you can find information about that as well. Thank you again for tuning in to this episode of 3GT.